From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. At a press conference in Bethel last night, Governor Mike Dunleavy said he will request a federal disaster declaration for the storm. The declaration would make federal funding and support available for recovery efforts. Major General Torrence Sachs is commissioner of the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. He said before the governor can submit the request, state officials must determine how much funding to ask for. Sachs said the state will ask the federal government for both public and private assistance.
So that would be money for infrastructure and also for individual homes. And to get that, we need to get boots on the ground from FEMA, which they are doing right now, to assess exactly what has happened and the dollar amount.
Dunleavy said if the federal disaster declaration is approved, FEMA would cover at least 75% of eligible disaster costs.
Well, we think that a lot of the damage is going to be as a result of erosion on roads, some structures, maybe some power poles, et cetera. So certainly we believe that that's fitting for the federal government to help with that.
Yesterday, state officials visited Hooper Bay and Scammon Bay and flew over Chivac. Dunleavy said there was less damage than some officials had anticipated, and things were starting to go back to normal. Today, they plan to go to Neutok. They'll also go to Bering Strait communities, including Golovin and Nome, later this week. Brian Fisher, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, said 63 Western Alaska homes have been reported damaged so far. The city of Nome's focus is on infrastructure as cleanup crews move toward the east end of town and assess damages in the areas outside city limits. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports.
Aside from a transformer that blew yesterday at the state office building on Front Street, Nome's downtown area is in good shape. That was City Manager Glenn Steckman's assessment during a recent emergency operations meeting.
Considering what you got impacted, I think the city looks pretty good. And unfortunately, there's probably millions of dollars of damage going outside the city.
After significant cleanup efforts from many local volunteers, a storm recovery version of Nome is what some visiting tourists saw yesterday. Port Director Joy Baker says the next scheduled cruise ship, La Boreal, was able to stop into town for the day. Baker recommended the city have an inspector from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers take a look at the bridge at the causeway and other port infrastructure. The lingering question was about the condition of the port's fuel lines, which Baker says has now been addressed.
We've done an air test on the lines and the pressure held on all three lines last night. So we are calling it, and we talked to Seekers, and he agreed that the pressure stayed good all night, that we can use the lines. And after the utility fuel's in the line, we're going to go ahead and hydrotest that one.
Looking outside city limits, the dock area around Cape Nome and surrounding landscape is completely changed. Alaska Sea Grant biologist Gay Sheffield says she was taking water samples and assisting stranded marine mammals in the Cape Nome area, which is unrecognizable.
The rocks from the south end are now filling in and have been moved so that it's all rocks filled into the north side of the pier. You can't sample there anymore because there's no water there. It's just filled with boulders.
East of town, the city of Nome is still assessing the full extent of the damage at places like Fort Davis, to the cabins and subsistence areas that are vital to Nome residents, and to the Safety Sound Bridge near Mile 22. But Calvin Schaefer, the Western District Regional Manager for DOT, confirms there is a new channel flowing between the Bering Sea and Safety Sound.
Okay, I'm putting a dozer down at 16 Mile right now to start finding a road in there and get through to safety to the bridge and assess what we're going to do on that side of it with the big washout, the new channel that's its way in there.
It is currently unclear how many Native allotments and subsistence camps were affected at this point. However, Schaefer says several cabins were moved across the lagoon by the rising water and are now standing in new locations. Governor Mike Dunleavy is planning to visit Nome tomorrow to see the damage for himself. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
This November, Alaskans will decide whether to revamp the state's constitution. The once-in-a-decade constitutional convention question is usually voted down by a wide margin. But this year, questions about the permanent fund dividend, Alaska's fiscal woes, and abortion access have some saying now is the time to vote yes, while others say the document continues to serve the state well. For Alaska Public Media, reporter Aaron McKinstry reports.
The hour appointed by the Alaska Territorial Legislature.
For 3 months during the winter of 1955 and 1956, 55 delegates from around Alaska created the state's founding document.
I do accordingly, as governor of this territory, call a convention to order.
31-year-old Vic Fisher was among them.
Victor Fisher. Yep.
Now he's 98 and the last surviving delegate.
We all had the same goal, do everything possible to become a state.
Being late to the statehood game, the Alaska delegates had the benefit of pulling the best parts from other states' constitutions and learning from past mistakes.
It is short and specific, laying out the foundation for the state without going into a lot of detail that would have required changes.
The 12,000-word document has been updated 28 times since its passage, with voter-approved amendments to allow for the permanent fund dividend, prohibit sex discrimination, and create a right to privacy clause, for example. But changing the Constitution on a broader and more fundamental level requires a constitutional convention. Alaska is one of 14 states that regularly asks voters directly. Fisher says they wanted to give people in the future a way to revise the Constitution.
So we wouldn't have a document that just sat on the shelf somewhere and stayed unchanged.
Fisher can imagine a time when a constitutional convention could be necessary. But right now, he worries about the cost, the current political climate, and the possibility of outside interests and money influencing changes.
They could throw big monies, dark monies, at a constitutional convention and create a situation that would be just desperately miserable for Alaska.
But Republican Senator Robert Myers disagrees. He sees a constitutional convention as an opportunity for long-term planning to address fiscal questions around spending caps, the permanent fund dividend, and taxation.
Really, what we've seen over the last few years is some very significant changes in our economy and how things operate in Alaska. And our Constitution needs to reflect some of those changes.
Myers isn't alone. A group of conservative activists and politicians have joined forces to create a formal campaign called Yes Convention to advocate for the vote and not just to address fiscal issues. The recent Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe versus Wade has some looking at how Alaska's right to privacy clause protects abortion access. Advocates like Alaska Independence Party Chairman Bob Byrd want to look at changing Alaska's judicial system, altering the education system, and more.
The PFD is the spark, but when you get the spark like that and there's no limit to what a constitutional convention might produce, then we can look at the incredibly long list of things that need correction.
Byrd says it's important for voters to understand that they're the ones in charge of the process.
The people get to control whether or not there will be a constitutional convention. And then we'll get to vote as to who our delegates will be. And then we're going to get to vote as to whether we like what is produced by the convention.
A yes vote raises a lot of questions, like how much it would cost, when it would be held, and how delegates would be chosen. One white paper put an estimated cost above $16 million. And Alaskans could spend all that money and time and then reject the changes at the polls. Former Republican Senator Kathy Kiesel says it's too risky.
This is not the right time, with emotions running high on so many different issues, to try to sit down and craft a solid document that would continue to provide stability and a positive future for our state.
Kiesel and Fisher are co-chairs of Defend Our Constitution, a broad-based coalition against holding a constitutional convention. They agree that the current Constitution provides a strong foundation for Alaska.
A new constitutional convention can take the existing convention and dump it. Just start from scratch and do something completely different. And I'm not sure that makes any sense.
Voters will decide whether to hold the first convention since statehood on November 8th. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The City and Borough of Juneau Community Development Department will host a public information meeting about the Juneau Affordable Housing Fund this Friday at 3 p.m. over Zoom. The Juneau Affordable Housing Fund is a CBJ fund created to promote the development of affordable housing in the capital city. The meeting will provide an overview of the program and the application process. The application period is open from September 14th to October 30th. Program information and application forms are available at the Juneau Affordable Housing Fund website. And finally, the Alaska Department of Health has expanded eligibility for the monkeypox vaccine. Now, anyone who believes they are at increased risk for infection is now eligible, the department announced yesterday. According to the state health department, that might include sex workers, certain healthcare workers, and people with intimate or household contact with gay or bisexual men, and transgender people with multiple partners. Those interested in getting vaccinated can contact their local public health center or call the state's helpline at 907-646-3322. More than 450 doses have been administered in the state as of yesterday. Five cases have been reported in Alaska, four of which were in Anchorage. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, September 20th, 2022, Permanent Fund Dividend Day. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.